are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves, and happy Wednesday, everybody. Happy hump day. We are about to head into game two of a three-game week for the Timberwolves as Minnesota will look to have a much better performance than they've had the last several times out, actually. The Wolves host the Utah Jazz this evening at Target Center after losing five consecutive games, four straight on the road, and really trying to avoid going on a major, I guess five games is kind of a major slide, but a much any greater of a slide. When the Wolves were 9-8, they were able to get a win to stay a couple games above 500. And now after dropping five straight, they're 10-13 and officially out of the top eight in the Western Conference. So far this year, the Wolves have lost to the Jazz at home. They also beat the Jazz on the road as part of that home and home. We'll talk more about the season series between the two later on and what some of the keys to the game on Wednesday night are. Today's show, we actually are going to have a guest today. I'm going to have Ben Shepherds on, who works for Sports Radar and is a big Wolves fan. I'm going to have him on to talk a little bit about the rotations, Ryan Saunders' rotations, and how he's handled that thus far in his young head coaching career. And then we're also going to talk Wolves Jazz and what our each of our keys to the game against Utah is going to be in this one for the Timberwolves. Did want to touch briefly just to open the podcast about some of the conversations surrounding the December 15th. It's not really a deadline, but I guess benchmark when teams are able to start trading guys that signed as free agents or were acquired during the summer. And so that obviously opens up a lot of possibilities for the Timberwolves. You know, there's a handful of guys that fall under that category, but more importantly, it's people like D'Angelo Russell, for instance, who's the name who's constantly out there. And also teams, it's kind of that, like, not quite third of the way through the season, but you know, about 30% or so. And teams are really starting to get serious about whether or not they're contenders. There's a bunch of teams kind of in that middle, not quite contenders, but certainly not out. And I guess you could say that many of the teams in that middle tier of teams are what you could call pretenders in this case. So we will talk, or we'll see what happens here as we get Sunday, I guess is December 15th. The D'Angelo Russell rumors won't go away, of course. That remains something that is a real possibility for the Timberwolves moving forward. I don't think it's going to be this early. The Wolves have been better than I think anybody not literally everybody, but better than many people have expected. And so I don't think the Wolves are going to do anything rash. I'm not sure they would have anyways. Gerson Rosa seems to be a fairly measured person. So I don't know that anything happens with D'Angelo Russell. I don't want to make it sound like that's what I'm suggesting, but this is when we start to hear trade talk pick up. It's when teams start to become more interested in making moves, significant moves. For instance, the Cleveland Cavaliers are in the news a lot, or have been in the news a lot recently, because of the issues, the team not wanting to play for their new head coach Beilein. And whether or not that's fair, who knows? I don't want to get into the whole locker room drama thing, but allegedly that team is largely unhappy. Kevin Love would love to play for a contender, of course, is in the first year of a massive contract. So who knows if he ends up getting moved? I don't think it's likely he's moving to the Timberwolves, but that's one big name that's going to be out there in rumors. The Wolves are going to consistently be in rumors because of Robert Covington, if not because they may try and acquire D'Angelo Russell, but because they also have Robert Covington on the roster, and he's a coveted player by really any contending team. I mean, he was the hot name potentially going to Golden State in a Russell trade had Steph Curry not gotten hurt. And had the Warriors gotten off to a solid start to the season, you could have seen the Warriors looking to add somebody like Covington to help them in the playoffs this year. And then also with a couple more years on a really team-friendly deal at what, like under $11 million a year for arguably a top, you know, three and D guy league-wide, it's a steal. And so there's going to be plenty of teams coming after Covington. There's an article on The Ringer from Kevin O'Connor on Wednesday. So I guess the article would have been on Tuesday. It was an early primer for NBA trade season was the headline. It dealt with Kevin Love, a few other players, talks about the bubble teams becoming sellers, and mentions the Wolves related to Robert Covington, and lists, you know, several reasons why he could be moved. And I tend to agree with most of what O'Connor is saying. The Wolves aren't going to look to trade Robert Covington, but they could very well find a team that is willing to overpay for him because there aren't enough 3-and-D type guys on team-friendly contracts on the market. And the Wolves would be foolish to move him for pennies on the dollar or even for equal value, because I think it's really hard to find something of equal value like Covington, that much production for that little cost. But if the Wolves are able to find a team that's willing to give them a first-round pick and a team-friendly contract, or you know, a young bench player with some upside and a couple of picks or something like that, then the Wolves would be foolish to not consider it. Covington's a really good player and he fits the Wolves roster really well, but Rosas is a smart guy and he's going to look to do what's best to maximize his assets. And if that's trading Robert Covington, then I guess it's trading Robert Covington. I think it's unlikely that it happens until, if anything happens, I don't think it happens so much closer to the deadline, but just know that the chatter is going to start getting louder and it's certainly possible that something happens sooner rather than later. When you're talking about anything Wolves related on the trade front or anything on the trade front in general. So that would be the one name that teams are going to be really interested in. The Wolves are going to be trying to attach something like, you know, Gorgui Dieng's last couple of years of his contract. They may look to trade Jeff Teague's expiring $19 million. Teague's, of course, had really high peaks and really low valleys this year, which is pretty unlike last year, which is pretty much all just kind of flat and a bad year. But Teague's actually shown some ability this year, shown a little bit of burst that he might, you know, clearly he'd like to get that one last multi-year deal as he's, I think, 31 now. So Teague's a name we might start hearing on the market as well, especially if this nosedive that the Wolves are currently on continues, if they're not able to pull out of it. I think you're going to see a lot more talk about Teague being moved as well. But really, outside of Teague and Covington and maybe Gorgui Dieng, there aren't too many names on the Wolves roster that are likely to be out there in trade talks. Perhaps Noah Vonleh, if the Wolves think that Kata Bates-Diop is perhaps a guy who can hold down the four for the rest of the season, along with potentially Robert Covington. Maybe we see Noah Vonleh and his vet minimum deal get moved for a second round pick or something as we get closer to the deadline, depending on how everything shakes out. But I don't think anything is imminent. Just know we're going to be talking a lot more about it moving forward. All right, next up, we are going to have Ben Sheppers on the podcast. We're going to talk a little bit about the Wolves rotations and how they've been a little bit iffy of late, get his thoughts before our final segment. We'll talk specifically about Wolves Jazz. And then, of course, on tomorrow's show, we'll recap the game against the Jazz, talk through studs and duds and all that. But first today, we have to talk rotations. And let's go ahead and welcome in Ben.
All right, for our next segment, I have in a brand new guest to the podcast. We have Ben Sheppers on the podcast today. He works for Sport Radar, and he's going to be a guest on the podcast every now and again moving forward. And we just wanted to get his thoughts on a few different things Wolves related. How's it going, Ben?
I'm doing really good. Thanks for having me on the show. This is something I've never done before, but I'm super excited.
There you go. I am as well. I think this will be great. I alluded to this in our first segment, but rotations are a hot topic for the Timberwolves. And, you know, everybody's got an opinion on whether or not Ryan Saunders is doing a great job with his rotations. And they've certainly fluctuated quite a bit. So I just wanted to get your overall, I guess, general impressions of the Timberwolves rotation so far this year. Obviously, they've had a lot of injuries. But what is your take on how Ryan Saunders has managed his rotations overall?
Injuries are like the hardest, that makes this topic hard to talk about, just because we haven't had consistent health on the roster. One thing that's big is that Jake Lehman has been out for so long. He was a big piece of this team in the early parts of the season, but the one thing that I noticed against the most recent game against the Suns was that Saunders played, he played, what was it? Jeff Teague with Shabazz Napier at the same time. I thought that was super interesting. Honestly gave me a little bit of anxiety. I feel like it's kind of a liability defensively speaking. One thing that I do like is that Saunders is giving Kata Bates-Diop more minutes. I think that's, I think, you know, with how young he is, he needs the opportunity to prove himself. And I love watching him on defense. I think he has that reputation, or at least did in college, of being a good defender with his 7-foot wingspan. But, Other than that, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say KBD. I mean, he's been playing really well lately, and the nice thing about him is he primarily is playing the four, but he can also guard the three, and he can guard some fives too. And even though he's not ultra athletic, which is I think the primary reason he dropped to the second round was his athleticism, and he's not a great shooter, but he's been playing great. The Napier and Teague backcourt thing, basically since Napier came back from his injury, 10 days ago or so, they've mostly been on the court together, Teague and Napier, except for the game that Wiggins didn't play on Friday in OKC. And I don't know what the actual, and I should probably just look up their net rating, but I know it's horrible. The Wolves have not been good with both those guys on the floor together, but they've been pretty good to this point in the year with just one of them on the floor. So I don't know if it's just something where Saunders needs to pay better attention not that he's not paying attention to it, but use it more judiciously depending on who the opponent is.
Yeah, that's another thing that, you know, that touches on that was when Teague and Saunders had that conversation, making Teague the kind of leader of the bench. I think that's an excellent idea to run the offense through Wiggins and have why am I blanking on his name? Jarrett Culver, sorry, as a starting point guard. I think that's a better route. But where does that leave you afterward with Teague and Napier? Do you just not play Napier, or how does that work? Do you split minutes? I mean, you can't. It's hard to split. I don't know how many minutes Teague's been getting, but where do you put your, what basket do you put your eggs in that situation?
Right. And it's kind of the same problem we entered the season worrying about, which was the Wolves only really have two point guards, but how much are they going to let Jarrett Culver actually initiate the offense? And the answer is quite a bit, really, until they took Teague out of the starting lineup and Wiggins has been the de facto point guard, but Culver is still running the offense a decent amount. And being that he's not a very good spot up shooter, it makes sense that he's going to have the ball in his hands a lot as a creator. So, I mean, you're right. I think in order to, and this is a topic for another day, but I mentioned it, I believe on yesterday's show related to Jeff Teague, is that it seems highly likely that Teague with his expiring contract will be moved before the trade deadline. And then you're in a situation where depending on what you get back, you might have Jarrett Culver as your starting point guard and Shabazz Napier as your backup, or they could flip it and have Culver lead the second unit, assuming this team isn't like a true contender. I mean, if they're hovering around the eighth playoff spot, I don't think that's going to stop them from making a move like that, because theoretically the team's not, wouldn't get that much worse. They would be getting assets in return for Teague. But I do think that the answer is they're going to have to alleviate basically everybody except for, you look at all the wings Wolves have on the roster, Wiggins, Culver, and then the point guards and Napier and Teague, they're all best with the ball in their hands. And, they don't have enough of the Robert Covington types that can just be spot up shooters. Jake Lehman in theory is a shooter and cutter, but as you mentioned, he's been hurt. So, clearly there's a little bit that needs to be parsed out in terms of the rotations. I think Bates Diop is the biggest thing for me. When Jake Lehman comes back, what happens to those minutes? Does Bates Diop get those back up 4 minutes, or do they all go back to Jake Lehman?
You know, that's another thing. I think Diop gets more minutes. I think he's earned them. I think Saunders has to play this one on the fly, in that, you know, whoever's having a better night is going to get the minutes. I think based on, you know, historically speaking, at least this season, I imagine that Lehman gets those minutes as soon as he's healthy. I think he'll get weaned back into the rotation. I don't think he'll have, you know, take on his previous role full force right away, but I think he will experiment with giving, you know, one player more minutes one game, and just depending on how each one's playing.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. It at least seems to this point that it's something that Saunders is really important to him is keeping rotations fresh. I mean, Gorgui Dieng started the year out of the rotation. Now Noah Vonleh is out of the rotation. There's been a couple of random games where Trevion Graham has barely played, and then other games he started a number of games as well. So I think there's something to be said for that. I mean, Tom Thibodeau was notorious for using the same basically 9 or 10 guys and, you know, not communicating apparently with some of the other players regarding whether or not they were going to play. and what their role actually was. So I think Ryan Saunders' approach is probably better. But then there's weird things. Like, for the most part, I've thought his rotations are fine, except for the Napier-Teague thing. But in Phoenix the other night, Jordan Bell had a strong 4-minute stint, and that's coming on the heels of his really good performance in Oklahoma City and a decent job in LA. And he had a strong 4 or 5 minute stint in the first half, never saw the court again in the game. And I thought that was really interesting. And I'm not saying that he should necessarily be playing the four ahead of Bates Diop, but I wonder if there's some ability to have a lineup with Bates Diop at the three and Bell at the four when Covington is not on the floor, leave Towns at the five. I don't know. I think that was a little bit weird because, I mean, Bell's a good player, and the Wolves seem to have found something with him in terms of him playing alongside Towns, which seemed to be the plan all along when they acquired him this offseason.
Yeah, I think you're right in that Jordan Bell doesn't get enough credit for how good he is. I don't think he's an athletic monster. With the exception of him missing all those free throws against OKC, I really, really like Jordan Bell. I was really excited when the Wolves picked him up. But I think if you were to play him, like you mentioned, with Bates Diop at the four and him at the five, that would all have to depend on who you're playing against. I think you'd have to, because I don't know how tall Bell is, but I don't think he's quite big enough to guard some of the better bigs in the league. But that's just my opinion. I'm not really sure. It could work, but yeah, I don't know.
So for the record, I found the Teague Napier on the court together numbers, and I oversold it a little bit. They're not quite as terrible as you might expect. Their net rating is a -3.9 when they're on the court together, and their defensive rating is 111.1, which is insane. So predictably, they're not doing very well defensively. Neither one of them is. I mean, Teague's maybe an average defensive point guard. Napier maybe is also average, but neither of them are above average defensive point guards. And Teague has been pretty up and down with how aggressive he's been on offense. Napier just is kind of a spot up shooter for the most part offensively. So interesting to see where that experiment goes, I guess, moving forward. So I guess, I don't know, any last thoughts on the rotation before we move on and talk specifically about the game against the Jazz?
My last thing, just talking about defensive point guards, is that that's another one of the big struggles that Minnesota's been having this season, is if the opponent has a good point guard, we're having a really hard time guarding them. Obviously we have a Kogi that's capable of it, but all they got to do is get a switch, and then we're in trouble again. So, but yeah, that's my last 2 cents on the rotation.
Okay. Great. So up next, we're going to talk a little bit about the matchup against the Jazz that is upcoming tonight at Target Center. All right, we're going to wrap up today's show by talking specifically about Wolves Jazz on Wednesday night. The Timberwolves are hosting the Jazz for, I guess, the third matchup between the two teams this year. The Wolves won in Salt Lake City and then lost on the second half of a home-and-home. They had a Monday-Wednesday home-and-home a couple of weeks ago. And disappointing home loss to the Jazz. Again, the Wolves certainly could have won. This time around, however, the Jazz will not have Mike Conley available. He actually has missed their last three games and there are reports out there that he is not likely to play on Wednesday in Minnesota. And so that's significant. The last two times these teams played, in the game at Utah, Conley had 15.6 rebounds. And then in Minnesota, he had 15.6 assists, and then 16.8 assists in Minnesota. Obviously, he's one of their better players. So the Jazz went with, in their starting lineup, they started Ricky O'Neal on the wing. Excuse me, Royce O'Neal on the wing. Had Ricky Rubio on the mind with the Jazz, and of course he's not even on the Jazz anymore in that game. So they started O'Neal, Ingles, and Donovan Mitchell with Bogdanovich in the backcourt alongside Rudy Gobert, of course. So we'll see. We don't know yet exactly what this lineup is going to look like against the Wolves, but not having Conley is significant. The Wolves have had issues containing opposing guards. Not that Conley is a scoring lead guard like some of the other guys the Wolves have struggled to contain, but they also couldn't really slow down Ricky Rubio in Phoenix on Monday either. So, Ben, what would you say some of your, or I guess your top, couple of keys to the game against the Jazz on Wednesday would be?
The Jazz are such a tricky team, just because obviously you have the star power that Donovan Mitchell brings. Stopping him itself is a difficult assignment. But you also have guys like Bogdanovich and Joe Ingles who can, you know, go out. You know, Joe Ingles is an excellent shooter from downtown. Bogdanovich, any given night, he can have a night. And to pair that, you got Gobert, the best or one of the best defensive players in the league. Definitely, I feel confident saying he's the best big defensive center. It's a tricky team. I would say you start with Donovan Mitchell. You have to draw something up to contain him because he's such a good player.
Yeah, and that's obviously what the Wolves struggle with most, and what most teams struggle with when they play against the Jazz. They actually did an okay job in the game that they won. Mitchell only had 17 points, and it took him 23 shots to get it. At the game in Salt Lake City, he was 5 of 23 shooting. The Wolves had an excellent scheme to try and stop him. Josh Okogie was fantastic defensively. He actually came off the bench in that one, but the Wolves just did a good job with both Travion Graham and Okogie running at him constantly. Two nights later, when the Wolves actually lost to the Jazz in Minneapolis, it was a little bit of a different story. Overall, it was really Bojan Bogdanovic that killed the Wolves in both games, but that time around, Donovan Mitchell had 26 points, still took him 24 shots to get there, but he was 5 of 12 from beyond the arc, had 7 rebounds, only turned the ball over a couple times. But all things considered, if you get Donovan Mitchell to shoot, you know, to make less than 10 shots in each of your two games against him, you've done a pretty good job. So that'll certainly be job number one for the Wolves. The other thing about the Jazz is they're in a little bit of a tailspin, which seems kind of silly because the Wolves have lost 5 in a row. But given what the expectations were for the Jazz, they've lost 4 of their last 5 and 6 of their last 8, I guess. Their only wins have come against Memphis. Their only wins over the past like 2 weeks have come against Memphis, which is hilarious because the Wolves have actually lost to Memphis twice already this year. But other than that, they've lost to Milwaukee, Indiana, Toronto, Philadelphia, the Lakers, and the Thunder. Now, all of those teams are likely playoff teams except for maybe the Thunder. So they aren't exactly bad losses, but most of them haven't been all that competitive. They're almost entirely double-digit losses except for the game against Milwaukee. So the Jazz are in a little bit of a tailspin themselves. The Wolves, of course, haven't been very good at home, but after an 0-4 road trip, they're happy to be home. I would echo what you said about Donovan Mitchell. Towns has never really had, you know, tons of success against Rudy Gobert, which is understandable as barely anybody does. But he was actually decent, you know, last time around. He had 29 and 13 with 5 assists in the win at Salt Lake City. So definitely a solid performance from Towns there, despite Rudy Gobert. And then in the game in Minneapolis, he had just 14 points. He only attempted 10 shots, was 4 of 7 from beyond the arc. You'll remember he was really concentrated on drawing Gobert out beyond the arc and away from the rim. And it worked really well. The Wolves were in that game as well. They only lost by 8. So I would say for the Wolves, the other key would be to keep Towns moving around the court, not only spotting up from beyond the arc, but also not taking on Rudy Gobert one-on-one all that much at the rim either. It's never really a smart decision. So that would be the other thing that I would look out for.
Yeah, I love the idea of going at Gobert unconventionally as a big man. You know, like you said, Towns, we just got to get Towns moving around, get him on the outside. I think you have to put Gobert out of his comfort zone defensively if you want to have any success against him. He's just too solid.
Yeah, agreed. And there really isn't any other option besides him guarding Towns. I mean, the Wolves don't have another, they're not going to play another big man with Towns unless they put Jordan Bell in the game alongside Towns. But that's where Gobert is going to be. And the Wolves can do, you know, like you said, I mean, whatever they want unconventionally to try and, I think the biggest thing is to draw him away from the rim as much as possible. You can't really bank on getting him in foul trouble. He's a smart defender and he knows how to block shots without fouling. So that'll certainly be something else to keep an eye on. Any additional thoughts at all on Wolves Jazz, Ben?
You know, I'm just excited to see two momentumless teams. I think that's a super interesting way to look at it. I think it's a good turning point it's a good opportunity to the Wolves to have a turning point in the season to try to get back above 500.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, they're 10 and 13. Is that right? Yeah. 10 and 13. Yeah. And a winnable a stretch of games upcoming with some wins in there, potential wins in there. The Clippers on Friday will be really tough. That's that 8:30 ESPN game. They're wearing the City Edition jerseys. And then the Pelicans next week with a long break at home in between. So, yeah, it would be huge to get this win. If they don't, they're in danger of being on a huge skid before they have 4 days off in a row and then going back on the road for four games on the West Coast. So you're absolutely right. This is a key moment on the schedule. It seems kind of silly to say that, but remember that December 15th date is what, on Sunday, when teams can start trading guys they acquired over the summer, and teams are going to start deciding whether or not they think they can legitimately contend. If the Wolves want to make a case for being a playoff contender, this would be a key game to win. It would also give them the leg up in the season series against Utah, 2-1. Of course, they play four games against a divisional opponent, so that would mean they couldn't lose the tiebreaker just in case it came down to that, although it certainly seems likely that Jazz will stay comfortably ahead of the Wolves, but you never know. So that would be another kind of silver lining to it. All right. That's all we have for you today. Thanks once again for listening to Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Thank you, Ben, for being with us today. We'll have Ben back here at some point in the near future. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.